Now, this is a story about quite a few things, really. And it's a story, in one way, about Elisha. And I think Elisha was a cool dude. And I have a certain affinity with Elisha. I don't know if you know Elisha's story, which is essentially the story of 2 Kings. He's the main figure through that. If you were to go back just a couple of chapters, you would actually find that Elisha was walking along a road when some boys, some rude boys, called out to him and said, "Get out of here, baldy." So you know what Elisha did? He cursed them, and two bears came out of the forest and mauled 42 of them. Now, there's a story. I've never preached on that story. I'm not sure what the main idea... Well, actually, I kind of know what the story's about. This is right at the beginning of Elisha's ministry. And if you'll read it in chapter 2, the mantle of prophet of Israel is handed over from Elijah to Elisha. And then immediately after, you get a story of blessing, where Elisha blesses people. And then you get this story of cursing. And then it moves on to Elisha's ministry. So the authors show us that Elisha is a prophet and he has the power to bless and he has the power to curse as well. So certainly I guess the boys in that region learnt a lesson about mocking those with male pattern baldness. Now Elisha was cool in our story too. I don't know if you noticed this along the way. So it's kind of a bit of background to absorb here in this story. But what happens is when they eventually go to the king of Israel, who is in a tizzy because he thinks this is they're setting me up to fail, right? They're setting me up to fail and insult them. And what will I do? What will I do? And Elisha says, "Don't sweat it, king." He says, "Just send the guy to me. I'll fix him." So Naaman goes along to Elisha. Elisha doesn't even bother to go out to him himself. He just sends a servant with a message and says, "By the way, can you tell this guy who's potentially starting a war with us just to go out and wash himself seven times in the river?" So it's kind of an interesting story, right? So is this a story about Elisha, about his powers or his ability to call on the power of God? He was famous for his miracles. But Elisha, it seems, wasn't kind of interested in the miracle or even being in any way the main part of the story. Elisha didn't promote himself or seek any money. There's a kind of an addendum to this story if you read the rest of the chapter about what happened in that particular instance. So when we read this as Christians, what are we going to learn from this story? What is it that we want to know? Is the kind of idea in the story for us to be like Naaman, all right, to come to God for healing or to do whatever God asks, because ultimately he does? Or is it an upside down story? I don't know if you noticed that this healing story really starts with a powerless slave girl who's been taken from her own people. And she proves to be wise, while the powerful king of her people is foolish. Right? Is that what's in this story? Or do we read this as a missional story that says there's a pattern here for the inclusion of those outside the people of God, even Aramaeans? Well, kind of all of those things are true, and they're all in this story. But there's something that underpins everything that happens here, all of the events of this story of the healing of Naaman. Because like all of Elisha's miracles, this is a story about God. It's a story about God and who he is and what he can do. And in this story, the crucial idea about God that is explored is this idea of God's grace. God's grace at work. And I don't know if you noticed in the very first part of the reading, and it's a long reading, so you might have seen this. So let me remind you. Naaman was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. It's this idea that God was already at work. God was already at work in Naaman's life before Naaman knew it. And this touches This touches on this idea of grace. And by grace, I mean something more than the way we often talk about it. When we talk about grace sometimes, we think about it as condescension. That's sometimes how it's talked about, with real kings and queens, right? Grace and favour. Condescension, where a god, a king for no reason, will grant as somebody who doesn't really deserve it something. And it's kind of like that in religious terms. Something that a king didn't need to do or a queen didn't need to do. Or we might think about grace as mercy or pity. That's the way we sing about it in that song, Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I didn't deserve anything, but God gave it to me anyway. But there's more to this idea of grace than that. One of the interesting things in Kenya was that they would have a chapel service every day. They had very long days, right? Their day started at 5 o'clock in the morning, finished at 8:30 at night. And they would have a chapel service at 7:30. And what would happen is that one of the cadets would be called on to recite the 11 doctrines of the Salvation Army, which they would do. And it was actually, they were very good at it. And when they finished, everybody would applaud wildly and they would be greeted by their training officer. But one of the doctrines of the Salvation Army is this. It says, we believe there is one God who is the creator, governor and preserver of all things. That's what that little reminder about in verse 1, is that God is the creator and governor and preserver of all things. That God was at work whether Naaman knew it or not. See, sometimes we have this idea that God is like a wizard who sits outside history and just intervenes occasionally. But that's not really how it works. God is the creator, governor, and preserver of all things. God, in his grace, is present in every person's story, governing, keeping, and creating. And that's true. We need a bigger idea of the concept of grace. Grace is not just the door to salvation. Grace is not just the entry point to being a saved person, a door we walk through and then don't think about ever again. God, in his grace, is at work in our world, in our lives and in our hearts. Now, it can be easy to forget this. There's the story of the person who was running late for a very important meeting and they've arrived at the car park and they're driving around. They just can't see a car park anywhere. And they're saying, Lord, Lord, please, please help me find a car park. Lord, Lord, please. Oh, don't worry, Lord, I found one. See, lots of people have a role in this story. This idea that God is always at work. So this is a story. So the main part of the story is that Naaman gets healed, right? But what led to that? What led to that moment? He was a general outside the people of Israel, successful because God had allowed it. And a slave girl says to her mistress, if only the master would go to Israel, he would be healed if he went to the prophet. So the mistress, her mistress, tells her husband, Naaman. And Naaman goes and tells his king. And his king says, well, that's a great idea. I'm going to write him a letter and would send him some gifts. Israel's king panics. Elisha says, send Naaman to me. Elisha's servant says, wash 7 times in the river. Naaman refuses and goes off in a huff. Naaman's servant says to him, look, it's not that hard what he's asked you to do. Don't be upset about it. Just do what he says and let's see what happens. He's healed. All of those circumstances working together to lead to that moment. God worked through all of that, and that's grace. That's an aspect of grace. That God is at work in our world, that God is also always at work in our stories. God is at work in circumstances and people. God takes our words and our actions and our prayers and weaves them together for his glory. That's the message here. A long time ago when I was a young man, I remember one of my fellow youth groupers, giving their testimony, and they said, "I thank God because he's always there when I need him." So turn to your neighbour and just give your testimony. Just turn to the person next to you and say, "I thank God because he's always there when I need him." Just do it now. Say it. Person next to you. Say it now. Now say, "I thank God because he's there when I don't need him." Hang on. When is that? Right? So I understood my... it was my mum that corrected my theology. I didn't work it out. But this idea that God is always there when I need him, that's true. So we testify to that. God is always there. God is always there. That's grace. Right? We're looking for the car park. People says, "Don't worry, God, I've got this one on my own." No. God is always at work. God was there when Naaman didn't know he needed God, when he was winning those battles. God was also there when Naaman knew he needed the power of God. And in and through this grace, where God is always at work in our stories, God offered healing and restoration. So there's no question this is a healing story, right? Now, in the scriptures, it actually talks about leprosy. Now, leprosy was a cover-all word. It wasn't necessarily Hansen's disease, what we think of, that numbing of the parts of the body. So any disease of the skin was called leprosy. So it could have been something like really bad eczema. We don't really know what it was. We do know that he wasn't a social outcast. He was still a successful general. So it hadn't isolated him from his community. But it was serious, though, and Naaman wanted healing. And Naaman really wanted to be healed. And his need set off a train of unexpected actions, where the servant girl is wise, the king is foolish, Naaman blusters, and then another servant takes the lead. And God weaves all of this so that ultimately Naaman acts and is healed. And there's an important idea here, this idea that our actions play a part in God's healing and restoration. Now, this can be a worry to us, but I don't think it should be. Our actions play a part in God's healing and restoration. That God, it appears, through the Old and New Testament, God chooses to act when we play our part. It's not that God needs us to do something. God asks us to do something. Sometimes Jesus would heal. And in fact, before I left, we talked about his healing story in John, where Jesus healed when seemingly the man hadn't asked anything of Jesus. And Jesus took all the action. But it appears that in the main, Jesus as God, and in the Old Testament as God himself, as God the Father, asks people to act. And that our actions matter. But ultimately, it is God that does the healing. It is God's restoring power. Sometimes we worry about this. We worry I'm not doing it right, or my response is imperfect. The God who can use a slave girl's words, the actions of a wise servant or a prophet of God, that God can use our inadequate words and our inadequate actions. That is grace. It appears that God chooses not to act unless we play our part. We know God doesn't need our actions, but God asks us to act anyway. 800 years later, another foreign soldier would want healing, this time not for himself, but for his servant. The story's in Luke 7. So he asks the Jews to go to Jesus and say, "Please come and heal my servant." He believed that Jesus could heal with a word. And Jesus was amazed at this man's faith. Jesus didn't need that man's action. But God, Jesus heals anyway. God doesn't need our actions, but he asks for them anyway. He asks for our prayers. This is this idea of what we call cooperation with grace. That we act and God takes our actions, takes our prayers, takes our words, and uses them for his glory. And it's a humbling thing to think that God uses us. It happens for Naaman too. He feels this when he's healed. He's humbled by what God has done. He recognises God's greatness. And in fact, at the end of that reading Bridie gave to us, he actually calls himself a servant. He's not calling himself a general. He says, I'm a servant. He says, now I know there is no God except in Israel. Naaman, like us, was humbled at the magnificence of grace, that God was at work in the world. One of our generals who was a poet wrote a song, a Salvation Army song, it's an old one, and it says, I have no claim on grace, I have no right to plead, I stand before my Maker's face, condemned in word and deed. And I've always, that song, I remember those words, I have no claim on grace, I have no right to plead. And we feel that as Christians sometimes, don't we? We feel that we're unworthy. But that's only the beginning of the song. It's not the end of the song. Well, at least of that verse. It says, but since there died a lamb who guiltless my sin bore, I lay fast hold on Jesus' name and sin is mine no more. We don't live just in the start of that verse. Because it's true, we can feel God's goodness and holiness, and that can highlight our own failings. We can wonder, am I good enough for God? Am I really a good Christian? Have you heard of imposter syndrome? It's a thing, right? It's this idea that's been around for decades, that lots of people, if you really talk to them, feel that they're not good enough to have the job they have, and particularly prevalent in professional circles, right? That people feel that they're imposters. The people look up to me as a great doctor or a great lawyer or a great teacher or whatever it is. Actually, I don't think I'm that good. I'm just doing it this way because of this reason and this reason. So in their heart of hearts, people feel like they're imposters. And it's in Christians too. People say to us, you're such a good Christian. You're such a great prayer. You're such a holy person. And we think, oh, well, actually, no, I'm not. And no, I'm not. Right? We can feel like that. But what we can also be sure of is that the God of infinite grace is at work in our lives and in our hearts. The God of infinite grace is at work in our redemption and in our holiness, in our salvation and in our living. One of the lines from that song I quoted before was soul-renewing grace. Our prayers are inadequate often. Yes, we stumble over our words. We can't say exactly what's in our hearts. God uses our prayers anyway. Our actions don't seem big enough or grand enough or holy enough, but God uses them anyway. And God uses our actions to refine us and to heal us and to do his work in us. You see, every story, every person's story is God's story too. Every moment is alive with God and his grace. So let's live as restored and healed people. We can trust him, the God of the infinite and the God of the minute, the God of the whole realm of nature, the God whose eye is on the sparrow, the healing, loving, restoring God who watches over us, who saves us and who keeps us. After Kenya, I travelled on to France with Sharon and we met up with our son over there. And we went to Brittany. And this is where in western France the First World War was fought, that pointless war. And some of you have seen this, of course. You drive through this area of France and there's just graveyard after graveyard with thousands and thousands of tombstones. And when you walk through them, and I felt like in some way I need to honour them and remember them. And look, because they were boys mainly, 19, 20, lots of them, just young men who died there. And you come across lots of tombs to an unknown soldier. And they didn't know who he was by the time they were able to recover the body. They had no evidence for who he was. And the inscription says, a soldier of the Great War, known only to God. Known only to God. Their actions, their courage, their bravery, even their cowardice, known only to God. That's God's grace, known only to God. You and me, our actions, our prayers, our worries, our concerns, the good things we do, the kindnesses, the generosity, known only to God. And God takes that and God uses it for his plan, for his glory. We respond like Naaman, often imperfectly. And if you notice what he did in the story, when he's finally healed, he's kind of overwhelmed by this. So he goes back and he doesn't know what to do. So he says, look, Elisha, let me take some dirt. I'll take this dirt from this holy place and I'll take it back with me and I'll pray on this dirt because, you know, God is here. And Elisha says, okay. He says, oh, however, when the king wants me to bow down before that other god and he's holding my arm, I might have to bow. Is that okay? Elisha says, sure. Elisha says, go in peace. Go in peace. God doesn't mind our failings. He understands them, our weaknesses. But God uses us nonetheless. And so we lift our hands in worship or we keep them at our side. We want to pray, but we are silent. We want to testify, but we can't find the words. It doesn't matter. God, our Heavenly Father, accepts our inadequacies. He takes our actions and our prayers. He's like a father who takes the drawings of his child that's come home from preschool and God sticks them on the heavenly fridge. And he says to the angels, will you look at that? Will you look at that? Naaman's story begins and ends with grace. Elisha says, go in peace, and leaves Naaman to God's hands, the hand that sought him and found him, that healed him and restored him. Our God says, come sit with me in my presence. Tell me what you've done. Tell me how you've tried. And I'll show you how I worked it all together for good. I am here. What does that verse 3 of Amazing Grace say? Grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. Every moment is alive with God and his grace. So let's live as restored and healed people.